We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome to the True Faith Podcast. I'm Alex Hurst, and this is a special podcast that has been put together at fairly short notice for today. And the subject is, of course, Rafa Benitez. To speak about Rafa Benitez, and particularly in terms of the political moves that he makes and where that has come from in his previous career, there was no one better to speak to pretty much in the world than Sid Lowe. Sid, as most of you will probably know, is a well-respected and esteemed football journalist operating from Spain. He's the author of the 2013 William Hill Book of the Year. I'll get it right here. Fear and Loathing in La Liga, Barcelona, Real Madrid, and the World's Greatest Sporting Rivalry. I really enjoyed that book. It was absolutely fantastic. And Sid contributes to a variety of podcasts and publications across the world in Europe on Spanish football. So an absolute pleasure to speak to Sid about Rafa Benitez and how Sid has viewed Rafa Benitez during his time in Spain and also whilst coming across Newcastle. Special mention to Norman Riley, a True Faith podcast contributor, for setting this up. He is now our international agent for our guests, so thanks very much, Norman. And I'll not go on much longer, so all I want to say is thank you very much, Sid, for doing this. Massive pleasure, and I hope all you guys listening enjoy what he's got for us. So I'm joined now on the line by Sid Lowe. Sid, thank you very much for joining us. I've just given the listeners a large introduction about your credentials and the media success that you've had as one of the leading experts on Spanish football in the English media. So first of all, when did you come across Rafa Benitez? I take it was when he was starting out his managerial career, kind of 10, 15 years ago?
Yeah, I mean, obviously when he really started to be noticed was his time at Valencia, when of course he managed to... I still think, even now, what is it, 13 years on, 14 years on from the second of their league titles, I still think people haven't quite, outside of Valencia at least, expressed just how enormous an achievement that was. Because of course they took two league titles off that round side, that first Galactico era, at a time when the shift was coming. Admittedly, it wasn't quite there yet, so maybe this is why we don't look at it the way we look at Atletico winning the league a few years ago, but we didn't realise how extraordinary. Because bear in mind that after they won that second league title, we went a decade without anyone else winning the league in Spain that wasn't one of the top two. And so there was, I think that was an enormous achievement. So of course that's when people really started to get up and play those. But there were elements of what he did in Extremadura, elements of what he did at Valladolid that people had seen and spotted. And he was known as well because actually his origins were kind of in the public eye. And bear in mind, as most people know, that he's a guy that didn't quite have the playing career that he would have liked, but he's got a knee injury when he was at the World Student Games, I think in 1979, but I'm not sure about the year. Obviously had been at Real Madrid, had been assistant manager with Vicente Bosque very briefly, had one or two first team at Real Madrid. He's also someone who had a media presence because he was commentating games on Tele Madrid. And so this is a guy that people knew about. But in terms of kind of that big explosion of, wow, this is someone who's capable of doing something really quite special. And everyone knew that, to use that lovely Spanish phrase, that he was a pesado, which kind of means, it literally means heavy, but hard work, a real pain in the ass, really tactically obsessed, really, really detailed, really, really heavy going, but really quite impressive with it. And I think people knew that, but the real sense of this is someone a bit special, of course, was what happened at Valencia.
Very interesting. And And obviously that spell away from Spanish football he had, which was kind of littered with trophies and success at Liverpool, Inter, Napoli, Chelsea as well, of course. When he returned to Real Madrid, was there still that kind of sense of expectancy or excitement? Or what, you've just said that outside of Valencia, he maybe wasn't appreciated. Was it kind of seen as a negative appointment?
Yeah, I mean, genuinely, I think that's the truth, and I always thought it was very unfair. Admittedly, obviously, as it played out, it didn't play out well. So those who were kind of naysaying him when he first arrived, those who said that he wasn't a manager for Real Madrid, I suppose would claim that they were proven right. Now, I actually think in different circumstances, he could have been a very good manager for Real Madrid, but Rafa's. Rafa's great skill is the tactical work, the attention to detail, the relentlessness of the way that he works, and what that Real Madrid team needed at that particular time. But when he came, I think there was a sense that this is, on one level, I think there was a welcoming kind of sense of this is a guy who is Real Madrid through and through. This is a guy who was at Real Madrid, team player, a guy who coached through the youth systems of Real Madrid C and then Real Madrid B, a guy who'd been assistant coach, as I said before, with Vicente Bosque, and I said that this is a guy that sort of deserved his opportunity. But the truth is, he wasn't someone that the Spanish were especially fond of outside of Valencia, as it should have been. I really do think that. I think had he done that with a team that was in kind of media terms perhaps more the kind of club that the media likes to talk about, obviously Madrid and Barcelona are clear cases, but had he done that, for example, at Atletico Madrid, I think maybe he'd got more recognition than he did, and I think he deserved more. Of course, Istanbul is always talked about as one of the great footballing moments at Liverpool, and the fact that he took Liverpool to another final a couple of years later, although curiously enough, I think that second final against Milan has kind of been forgotten as well.
Yeah.
And I think that's extraordinary achievement, really, to take a relatively limited Liverpool side to two Champions League finals in 3 years, and then actually take a much better Liverpool side as he started to develop it. Pretty close to the league title that year then when Torres was there, and I think they beat Man United, was it 4-0 or 4-1 at Old Trafford, and were pretty close to winning the league, certainly close to what Liverpool have been for the last 20 years. But the truth is that in Spain, I don't think there was a huge amount of warmth towards him. I think there was a recognition from some parts, less than I think there should have been, but not a huge amount of warmth. There wasn't really a sense of great, Rafa's back. I think in part that's because of that kind of, because of the type of manager he is. There wasn't that sense of, this is the kind of person that players talk really highly of. The players who talk highly of Rafa, if you notice, I think this is in itself very telling, because they have a really close relationship with him. And listening, for example, to Fernando Torres, a guy who's actually very serious about his football. And Fernando Torres always recognised the impact that Rafa had, but obviously would never have claimed to have been his best mate. And I suppose that, in a way, is a kind of a definition of what Rafa was like as a coach. So when he came back, there wasn't this big excitement. I think, of course, had things gone well, then there would have been this kind of retrospective. See, he was always the right man. But the truth is that when he came in, there were a lot of people who already, at the very start, thought that it probably wasn't. And I must say, while I was I doubted that he could be the right man for Real Madrid, simply because that dressing room, that environment, the political nature of Real Madrid, I thought was always potentially risky for him, and sadly, because as I say, I quite admire Rafa, and sadly it didn't work out.
Yeah, and obviously it was to Newcastle United's benefit that it didn't work out, but it was certainly strange for us that, and it's been well documented now that Rafa actually contacted the club, made the first move when he was out of work at Madrid. How was that viewed in Spain when he came to Newcastle? Because obviously we were deep in trouble at the wrong end of the Premier League. Eventually we were relegated despite his best efforts, and he did do a fantastic job in my opinion when he turned up to turn around the sinking ship. Was there much reaction in Spain, or was it, or maybe did they not kind of look at English football in that much detail, and particularly a coach like Rafa?
They do. I mean, English football is very popular in Spain, so there is an awareness. But admittedly, as you might imagine, in the mainstream is not perhaps quite the right word, but the kind of the really popular end of the football media and fans in Spain, it's quite a superficial treatment by definition. And that's the way it is. So as you can imagine, those who were not on Rafa Benitez's side, or those who thought that he wasn't a great manager, and there were many of them. And bear in mind as well, an important element when it comes to judging managers, and this happened to Pellegrini as well, is that there's a retrospective demolition of those managers, which goes much, much further than the original doubts. So what happens is someone leaves Real Madrid, and because there's this kind of I'm not even sure it's conscious. I think it's a subconscious thing. There's a subconscious desire for a well-rounded sport at an institutional level. So what you get is a kind of a retrospective demolition of the managers who didn't do well. And that's politically driven, there's no doubt about that. There are elements in Spanish media who, it goes wrong, Real Madrid has sacked the manager, it's all the manager's fault. Right, let's all get on with it, the rest of us are fine. Now, of course, for Rafa's big problem is that he leaves and Real Madrid win the Champions League without him. And then they go on and win it again. And so you retrospectively, people can look at it and point the finger and say, well, see, that shows it was Rafa's fault. Now, I personally think Rafa probably was the wrong decision. But I think it was the wrong decision because of the specifics of that dressing room, of that president, of the impositions that were made. And this is not by any means, by the way, to say that Rafa is blameless, because he's not. But I think he was specifically the wrong manager at the wrong place and at the wrong time. And I think I'm interested. So specifically in terms of your question, which is how did people react when he went to Newcastle and then when things went wrong and Newcastle went down, well, things were already going wrong. Obviously, because of that desire, if you like, that kind of retrospective desire to slaughter him and to bury him, when he went, the blunt truth is that people said, well, there you go, he's found his level. You know, he shouldn't be at Real Madrid, but yeah, a club that's going to go down from the Premier League, that's Rafa. You know, those who were really critical of him thought that's Rafa. And then when they went down, of course, people again pointed him, see, he's just got relegated. There was no recognition, I don't think, or very little recognition, except from those who were following his football a little bit more closely, that Newcastle's relegation was because of being in spite of Rafa. You know, the work was good, but the damage was already done. But it enabled those who were not on his side, I think, to kind of point the finger very, very quickly and say, well, there you go, that's where Rafa should be. Now, to take it from the more positive side of things, I remember writing about this when it happened, when he went to Newcastle, and speaking to a few people who knew him, and then basically said to him, well, what if, you know, because I must admit, I thought this is an odd one, because he's going to get relegated with Newcastle. He's come from Real Madrid and presumably would aspire to something bigger. But I spoke to a few people who know him really quite well, and certainly one of them who is, you know, obviously I say this as a Londoner and removed a little bit from Newcastle, never forget that Newcastle are an absolutely fucking enormous club. They really genuinely are a huge club with a massive fan base, with a big history, that even if there's a recognition that they're problematic, even if there's a recognition that they're likely to go down, if Rafa handles it right, if Rafa manages it right, if they support him in the way, and this is always the big question, of course, if they support him in the way he wants them to, and this was very much one of the problems at Real Madrid, and of course we saw it at the clubs as well, Valencia, in particular the famous Sopa and Lamp comment.
Yeah.
But if they support him, you know, even if they down, he'll come back up, he will be able to build it, he will be able to prove himself. And the other point, and this was effectively the theme of what I wrote at the time, is that Rafa Benitez is a football manager. You know, he's obsessed, he's driven by this, he wants to manage. He's not a guy who wants a big job, he's not a guy who wants glory. Of course he wants glory, everyone wants glory and everyone wants a big job. But what I mean is, that's not necessarily what drives him. He's driven by, if you like, the job itself. He's genuinely a vocational manager. And so in that sense, I think it was actually a logical move, albeit in, you know, the kind of the gut reaction is, wow, here's this guy that's been at Chelsea, at Liverpool, Inter Milan and Real Madrid, and he's going to Newcastle. But given the chance to do it the way he wants to do it, I think for someone like Rafa, Newcastle is actually very, very attractive, because, you know, fundamentally he's driven by being a manager. Football manager is what he is, it's his identity. And so I think the opportunity to do that at a big club, even one in trouble, to build. And you know what, genuinely I think Rafa would have probably looked at that and probably had a kind of a two-tiered plan. One is that this is what I do, this is how we try and avoid relegation, this is how we try and work. But realistically, we probably are going to go down. But that's the reality of clubs in trouble. There is always, assuming that it's reasonably well run and assuming the manager is sensible and intelligent, there is always a dual plan that there has to be, assuming that you will be given the opportunity to continue even with relegation. Of course, that was the case with Rafa, and the side came straight back up again.
Yeah, and he's certainly obviously worshipped by the fan base here. And one of the things which is, you know, fans listening to this right now will be interested in is how kind of common his political moves are in Spain, whether it's something that is purely a Rafa Benitez thing, or maybe it's as you know, random as it is for managers in any part of the world. But, you know, we're in a situation where Rafa is letting the local press and certain fan publications know about how allegedly unhappy he is with transfer negotiations. Now you've got two tiers here. You've got people worried he'll leave, And you've got, you know, I think the Daily Mail ran a story a couple of weeks ago saying his future's in doubt. And then you've got the more local journalists saying there is no way Rafa Benitez would walk away from Newcastle United. But he's unhappy. From Rafa's history and from what you've talked about there, not just Valencia and Madrid, which kind of everyone knows about, but the smaller clubs he had success at before, do you think there would be any chance of Benitez walking away from Newcastle if he didn't get what he wanted? Or do you think, like you say, once he's invested emotionally, and my guess is that he is, you'll kind of see us through no matter what?
Yeah, I mean, the first thing, of course, from a distance, first thing to say, I can't claim to understand the kind of the if you like the machinations or the ins and outs of how his relationship with Newcastle works. But it's certainly true that from a distance he appears to be emotionally engaged with this. I think, you know, this is a club that when he first signed his contract, obviously pay very, very well, and theoretically have the money to sign players, although of course that's often the crux of the issue that comes next. You know, the issue that comes next is, well, you're a club that's got the money to pay for the players, why aren't these players here? Why haven't we got them? Why haven't they arrived? And you know, this brings us back, as I mentioned very earlier on, I think Valencian saying, I asked for a sofa and they brought me a lamp. You know, this is, I want certain types of players because I have a very clear vision of what I want, and if they don't come, Rafa has always been a manager who is prepared to say so, sometimes publicly, sometimes, you know, by a little bit more of a kind of a roundabout route, you know, to reveal those doubts. Why? That's a good question in terms of why, because I often wonder whether it's partly just an openness and a willingness to chat and perhaps a willingness to express grumbles, whether it's otherwise also or instead of message out there to put pressure on, to try and manoeuvre, or at least to try and publicly say, listen, if this doesn't go right, it's not entirely my fault. And obviously I think Rafa, like anybody, I mean, we're all human, I think Rafa, like any manager, sees the flaws in others more quickly than he sees them in himself, of course, and I think we're all like that. And I think he's very, very keen and very sharp in terms of what it is he wants. And so I think that means that he's not the kind of manager that, if you know, if he asks for three players and he wants X, Y, and Z, and it turns out to be X, Y, and B, most managers would go, well, that's not too bad, and we can work with this. And B, the player, I can make him into Z. Rafa won't. I mean, I think Rafa is very, very much more clear focused than that in terms of, this is what I want. And there's a very definite type with Rafa as well. So I think when you talk about kind of a sense that he is letting it be known that he's unhappy about certain elements of what's happening at Newcastle. We had that at Valencia, very famously, by the end, his relationship with Suso García Pitarch, the sporting director, was very, very poor indeed by the end. And for what it's worth, by the way, I think time has suggested that Rafa was right there, not García Pitarch. That also led to a deterioration, by definition, I suppose, because he's the guy in the middle with the relationship with the president at the time, a guy called Manolo Llorente. He, I think actually it seemed for a while, of course, that things were going very well at Liverpool, but then you have that beginning of the whole collapse at Liverpool, where Torres goes and Xabi Alonso goes, and you have this feeling that, okay, we took it this far, and then it starts to break down. Obviously, as it turns out, with the later arrival of Luis Suarez, perhaps if Rafa had been around long enough to be able to work with Suarez, he might have found that actually we can do something here at Real Madrid. And I think Real Madrid is a really interesting case study, because one of the reasons why I doubted, as I said before, I talked about it being kind of that kind of dressing, the politics, the presidential side of things. One of the reasons why I was surprised at the way it unravelled at Real Madrid, maybe more than the fact that it unravelled, is because of how it happened. So Rafa, who I think has always been very, very clear, Rafa, I think, has always wanted an enormous amount of control, which, for what it's worth, I think is a kind of a managerial mentality that's quite British, whereas in Spain, of course, managers, or coaches rather, are coaches. You know, the sporting director is the guy who decides on the signings. The president quite often has a say on the signings. The manager theoretically gets consulted and theoretically has a say, but his degree of authority fluctuates with results, and so he doesn't always have the full authority that he would like in terms of signings, but more importantly at a club like Real Madrid, in terms of the side, in terms of the team. Now, I think one of the things that happened at Real Madrid was that he went there, and right at the very start, I think he probably wasn't enough of a pain in the arse. I think he probably wasn't authoritarian enough with the club in terms of, this is what I want. If I'm coming in, you know, if I'm coming in, this guy, this guy, and this guy has to go. And I would like this kind of player, please. And you look at the players that Rafa Benitez wants, and it's curious because with time they've been proven to be pretty good. He wanted Kovacic, who's turning out to be a very good player. He wanted Lucas Vázquez, who's been very, very useful. I wouldn't say he's a first-team player. I almost like him a little bit to Antonio Nunez at Liverpool. You know, someone you can get who can be sort of steady, useful, and come in and play. And he wanted a certain type of approach. He wanted certain players not there. James Rodriguez he had problems with, left James on the bench. James and him fell out quite badly. That was a very significant point of tension between the two of them, and therefore by definition a point of tension for the club. And yet curiously Zidane comes in and Zidane does the same with James. He gives up on James as well, who by the way I think is a brilliant player, but for whatever reason these two managers didn't want him in. When Benitez left him out, it was like the question of state. This was a terrible thing to do. When Zidane did it, with the natural calm, charisma, authority, the status that he has as a Real Madrid legend, so you can see right from the start the conditions are different, partly of course because Zidane comes after Benitez. It is also true though that some Real Madrid players right from the start in pre-season didn't necessarily relate particularly well to Benitez. Not all of them didn't, but some of them didn't right from the start. And some big names in that dressing room: Modric, Cristiano Ronaldo, Sergio Ramos, one or two others who just didn't quite relate to him. The other thing that I think is, which is really, really significant for me, is it felt to me from the start that Benitez came almost to do someone else's model. So, for example, the repositioning of Gareth Bale as a second striker felt very, very strongly. You know, one or two snippets of information that certainly lean me even more in this direction. But the idea of playing Bale behind the forward was not Rafa Benitez's, and more importantly, that bit I know is not. I know that bit is true, that it wasn't just from Benitez, that it came much more from the players, came from the club, kind of boardroom level. But the bit I'm suspicious about, and I'd love to know, is I'm not convinced that Benitez wanted to do that either. But Benitez got on well with Bale, and he was training Bale, and was working on him, and trying to make him that second striker, to give him that freedom to be almost a number 10, which in truth Bale isn't, and certainly not if you're playing Spanish football. So I think one of the interesting things was that Benitez looked at his kind of environment. So right from the start, he almost wasn't himself. And of course, the game that kind of defined this in a way was the Clásico. Now, I remember writing at the time that Benitez, you know, the old phrase, you know, so-and-so dies with his boots on. I remember at the time that phrase kind of stuck in my mind. And Benitez died with someone else's boots on. So he goes into the Clásico, and he wants a defensive midfielder like Casemiro, but doesn't play him. He doesn't want James in the team, but does play him. He does the team that has been, if you like, suggested to him. Indirectly, maybe, perhaps not a straightforward look, the president wants you to play like this, or else you're sacked, matey. But more kind of like, you know, if this was the team, and it's well, then no one could blame you, because this is the team that everybody wants. And the thing that Benitez did was not be Benitez, and he swallowed it, and they lost 4-0. And so at that stage, if you think, well, if you lose 4-0, I'm not in trouble because it was a team they wanted. Actually, the reverse happened, because I think any sense of authority, any sense of his own authority, his own importance, I think went along with that defeat. And so I think that was worse than just a defeat, because it wasn't even a defeat with his kind of team. And while that might have been seen as something that could have helped protect him, because, you know, well, this is what the president wanted, I think it actually did the opposite, because it's true it was the team the president wanted, but they lost and they got beaten back, and he didn't even have the authority to be able to say, right, I did it my way, I did it my team. And of course that lost him that little, like, that extra authority and extra kind of respect, if you like, from in the dressing room. So the curious thing for me was that Rafa Benitez was always likely to fail at Real Madrid because he was Rafa Benitez, but ended up failing not even being himself.
Yeah. No, I mean, it was kind of hard to watch. I remember that 4-0 game, and Newcastle had actually just been hammered, I think, by the eventual champions, Leicester. 3-0 at home that day, and we went and watched the match. Was a 5:30 kickoff or something. Went and watched it, and I think we couldn't quite believe how inferior.
Just wasn't Rafa's thing.
No, yeah.
It's obviously, look, I don't want to pigeonhole Rafa entirely, but Rafa has some very clear footballing principles, none of which were on display that day. None of them.
And I suppose I don't want to keep you too much longer, but you know, moving into the new season, presuming all will be well, do you think that, you know, Newcastle United will be a little bit more of a draw in Spain? I don't know how much football shown on television over there.
Yeah, a lot. I mean, look, Newcastle are a team I think people quite like anyway, just because they're a big club, because they're seen as unique, because they're seen as, I think they're still seen as a club that, despite, you know, despite very many reasons not to feel like this, they're still seen as a club that's close to them, despite ownership issues and so on, just to say the least. I mean, let's not get in too deep on Mike Ashley. But there is a certain degree of fondness for them, and I think there will be an awareness of what's happening with Rafa Benitez. As I say, that will be polarised, because I think with Rafa has always been a polarising figure, and I think in Spain even more so. So there will be some who really, really want him to succeed, but there will be an awful lot who would quite like him to fail. But yeah, Newcastle will be watching. I mean, bear in mind that Spanish TV, I mean, admittedly it's subscription TV, so it's not free to air, although the FA Cup was free to air last year. I think they're showing it might be 6 Premier League games a weekend, and there's no doubt that Newcastle will be one of those that people are interested in, because you know, Rafa is still a Spaniard, even if he's a Spaniard who's clearly felt probably even more at home in the UK than he has in Spain. You know, his connection with Liverpool was very, very deep. The fact that his family set up on the Wirral and remained there, you know, his willingness to go back, in fact his desire to go back, and as you rightly said, you know, he goes to Newcastle, right, let's talk about this opportunity. There have been other options in England as well, with clubs that you would say are not as big as Newcastle even, and you sort of think, well, you know, this is a guy who's really, really embraced England, embraced, I think, the kind of the British attitude, British mentality. Admittedly, he's always, you know, he's kind of unsatisfied a lot of time, because that's the nature of him, because he's so driven, because he is that, you know, go back to that word pesado, that pain in the arse, that tough going guy that's kind of can be difficult to live with, but very, very ultra professional. I think you know, there will be in Spain a little bit of additional interest because it's Rafa Benitez, because he doesn't stop being a Spaniard, but there is also, I think, as well, a sense that, you know, there's an awareness now that I think Rafa's place is probably the UK more than it is Spain.
Nice one, Sid. We're hugely appreciative. That was thoroughly enjoyable. Thanks for your time.
My pleasure.
It's happening daily. We're being conned by the institutions we used to trust. The mainstream media is distracting us with meaningless headlines instead of focusing on the harsh realities facing American families. Time is short before something big happens, and that's why so many folks are preparing. They're becoming self-reliant by investing in emergency food storage from My Patriot Supply. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com and secure 4-week emergency food kits for each member of your family. Each kit contains tasty breakfasts, lunches, and dinners, averaging over 2,000 calories per day. Save $50 on each 4-week food kit you purchase. Plus, get free shipping on Ready Hour 4-week emergency food kits. You're not ready if it's not Ready Hour foods. At My Patriot Supply, you can also get solar power generators, water filtration units, heirloom seeds, and survival gear. Order by 3 p.m. and your unmarked boxes ship the same day. Shop MyPatriotSupply.com today. MyPatriotSupply.com.